is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. We have the most amazing group of people here today. This is America Out Loud's finest experts, analysis, and commentators you'll find on this program today, bar none. Let's get started here with the top stories here and welcome on here Dr. Ron Martinelli. Dr. Ron is a retired police detective. He's a forensic criminologist. He's a national voice known as the expert's expert. And again, big voice, big shows. You'll see him on the platform. His book, The Truth Behind the Black Lives Matter Movement and the War on Police, is, of course, on Amazon and in the America Out Loud bookstore. Joining us as well, Ilana Friedman. Ilana is a veteran intelligence analyst, a political commentator host here at America Out Loud. Her book that is so relevant today, you must read, is called Hamas, Care, and the Muslim Brotherhood, The Plot to Destroy America. Again, friends, our bookstore is full of great books from all leading experts around the nation. Many of our leading guests and our experts, you'll find them there in the bookstore here. Speaker Pelosi puts off the vote again, and this came to a head here over the past week again. I guess the real big question, Dr. Ron, is this an impeachment inquiry or more of a political strategy to tarnish the president in the court of public opinion?
Yeah, no, this is pure political theater. There's no forensic facts behind any of these allegations. And it is. It's just to take the air out of President Trump's campaign and to try to distract people away from him and his message.
But, you know, Ron, they've been doing that from day one, haven't they now? It just keeps changing whatever the argument or discussion is. But now it looks like they've lost their minds in the process. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you're right in what you said before. The public is becoming weary of it. I mean, even my friends that are Democrats and libertarians are already tired of this and they just want to move America forward. And once you see that there's really no there, then it's time to move on.
Yeah. And you know, that's exactly it. Move America forward. Shouldn't that be really the ultimate goal of everybody? I mean, by golly, we send these clowns to Washington and they forget that basic principle that Dr. Ron puts out there. I don't know, people. It should not be lost on anybody. Ilana, you see the death of Elijah Cummings here, the chairman of the powerful House Oversight Committee, and of course, the 68-year-old congressman from Baltimore here. Surprised everybody, happened pretty quick, although he had been battling a sickness for a while here. Now, his death, do you think that has an impact at all on this rush to impeachment? Because he was pretty well in the center of this as well.
He was, but I think the movement within the Democrat Party is so strong and is so overwhelming to all of the players that I don't really think that there's going to be much change with him gone. It will just be coming from somebody else. The whole activity of the Democrat Party in Congress is so abominable that everything that they are doing is anti-American in every way. They are shutting down free speech. They are making their investigation in secret. And it's just not acceptable. This is what the Russians did, the Soviets did when they had secret trials. It's mm-hmm. what the Nazis did. This is not American what they're doing now, and I think it's got to stop. And Cummings was sick for a long time. Yeah. We didn't know it, but he had a walker and a wheelchair.
That's right.
And he, you know, and
well, it seems like they hid that very well from the American people. In fact, as I mentioned the other day on the program, he took sick on the House floor at one point, and I seen the video of that, and I kind of knew something was going on with him, but nothing was really being said more than that. The other big thing coming out of this whole impeachment thing and, of course, Ukraine story, which is all sort of tied together here. Dr. Ron, this is kind of in your neck of the woods, which is the Energy Secretary Rick Perry. Of course, he comes from Texas. You know, he says he never seen any comments or heard anything of Joe and Hunter Biden mentioned in any relationship to Ukraine. Of course, part of the problem in the last few days is the acting chief of staff, Mick Mulvaney. He updated his comments saying that the delay of funding military aid to the Ukraine was in relation to their cooperation with the Justice Department investigation and a common process before release of funds. He was pretty out there. Of course, he says it was no quid pro quo, but his description of it kind of fit into the opposing hand, did it not?
Yeah, but you know, here's the bottom line. I don't have a problem with it, and let me tell you why. First of all, the Ukraine has had an entire history of corruption, and we actually have a treaty with, after the government left and the new government came in, the United States has a treaty, an existing treaty with the Ukraine to fight, mutually fight corruption. The President of the United States' responsibility is to protect the security interests of the United States and the election process and everything like that. If he sees corruption or if he suspects corruption on the part of any American citizen, be there a top-tier level politician or just a regular citizen, it's his obligation and entrusted responsibility to do what he needs to do to investigate that. So I don't have a problem with them holding back money. I don't see it as a quid pro quo. I haven't seen a single shred of evidence of that. I see this as the President of the United States doing his job.
Yeah. And of course, we're really not arguing the facts anymore. It's just when all of your might and all of your energy and effort is bent on getting the president out of office, it doesn't matter what we're talking about, Ron, because nothing's ever going to be resolved. Ilana, have you been watching the rallies that Trump does? Have you been watching some of those?
Yes, I have.
The thing I picked up from those rallies, Ilana, is the body language of the people. Now, you take the one in Dallas, and you take a look at the crowd inside and outside. And if you just study the body language and the people, I mean, they are mesmerized with this president, Ilana.
They love him, and they are, they come and they come for the excitement, and they come for the energy that this president shares with them. And they, by participating in it, they create more energy. And on my last show, I talked about polling and how inaccurate it is and how unfair it is to the American people because it misinforms them. These are the polls. You look at his rallies. These are the polls we should be watching. In the last rally where he was in Texas, there were 30,000 people outside the arena. Yeah.
That was quite an impressive rally, Dr. Ron, in Dallas. And compared to the one in Minneapolis, which you had the Antifa thugs come in and you had all this chaos at the end of it, which that's getting to be a pretty hot area out there in the Minneapolis area anyways. But quite a contrast from Dallas to Minneapolis with those rallies, huh?
Well, the Dallas Police Department and the joint powers are not going to put up with the crap that they put up with in Minneapolis. And compare and contrast Trump's rally with tens of thousands of people with Beto O'Rourke's rally at the same time where he got barely 5,000 people and you could hardly see the coverage. And the media doesn't want to show that coverage because not very many people showed up. And a lot of those people, truth be told, were bussed in. And, Beto is just a side mark. He's a controversial individual. You know, he said he'd revoke the tax exempt status for churches and charities that have a religious nature. And also, he said he'd call the police in to confiscate guns. And he said this in his home state of Texas. Let me know how that works out for him.
Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah, he's a different kind of. It's hard to follow the man, quite frankly.
He's not going anywhere.
Yeah, well, now the front runner, Ron, is Elizabeth Warren, of course. Can you believe she's actually heading up that right now? She's the leader?
Well, you know, the situation that changed very rapidly, to be quite honest, and unfortunately for Bernie Sanders, is the fact that, you know, he's an old guy. He's frail. He had a cardiac arrest. That underscores the frailty of this man. Yeah. And it causes... you know, Warren to bump ahead.
Talk about bad timing. Talk about bad timing.
Right? Oh, no, seriously. Heart attack. And you know, because she's not as much a socialist as Sanders, I think the people in the Democratic Party are moving more towards her because Sanders scares them.
Yeah. It is interesting as you watch these debates, what happens and what comes out of these debates and the way they're taking this on, these Democrat candidates offering everything for nothing. I mean, the American people must be able to see through all this. It's become a real sideshow, the entire production. Are you watching the Democratic debates, Ron, as well, or do you watch those?
I do watch them because I want to know what comes out of their mouths. I don't like to go with hearsay. I like to listen to the candidates. I like to watch them and hear what their talking points are, all of which, by the way, are very scary.
Now, are you able to watch them without medication? Exactly.
I make sure that all the shoes and objects that could be thrown at the TV have been removed. Linda and I do that together.
Well, let me ask Ilana now. Ilana, are you watching these Democrat debates and do you do it without medication, I wonder?
Yes, but I must say that I think these debates are very entertaining, but not very educational. All it does is show me how dangerous a situation this country is in right
now. That's it, yeah. Truth be told, as most listeners probably know, I do not watch the Democrat debates because, friends, I would have to be heavily medicated to do that, quite frankly. Or the television would be on the ground and there would be problems. Yeah, I find it such chaos. What I do is I read the transcripts at the end and I see what they say, and that's kind of where I go, Ron. I can't watch them. Seriously, I can't. Now, when they get into more of the general debates and there's, you know, some sort of real conversation on policy up there, I'll be happy to do that. But to watch Anderson Cooper do the kinds of softball questions and the lunacy he does, I just don't see the relevancy of it, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's a problem as well, the way the media handles these things and manipulates these debates. Just like you said, the softballs, they never throw any meaningful probative questions out there.
Well, yeah, they didn't even talk about immigration. They didn't even talk about some of the biggest things that we're having. I mean, all they want to do is talk about bashing Trump. I mean, that's the whole strategy, which you can never win an election in this country by just bashing the opposition. You have to be for something. In a positive way. So listen, there was another big thing with all the talking about all this Democrat stuff here in regards to Hillary. Clinton came out. Now, let me read you what she says here. She was at some sort of a podcast program she was on. She says, and I quote, "I think they've got their eye on somebody who currently in the Democratic primary, and they're grooming her." Now, the her is Tulsi Gabbard, one of the Democratic candidates, as everybody probably knows by now. But they're grooming her to be a third-party candidate. Now, she said, she went on to say, she's the favorite of the Russians. They have a bunch of sites and bots and other ways of supporting her so far. Well, I got to tell you, let me play for you next Tulsi's response to that. And here's what Tulsi Gabbard, the Democratic candidate for president, said back to Hillary Clinton.
"You won't be able to continue to work from behind the curtain to continue these regime change wars that have been so costly. Thousands of my brothers and sisters in uniform were killed in Iraq, a war that she championed. Their blood is on her hands. I am calling for an end to these regime change wars."
What do you say about this, Ron, when it comes to Tulsi's response to Hillary?
Well, I think the response was absolutely correct. And, you know, this is a theme for Hillary Clinton. And if we go back to the 2012 and even the 2016 presidential elections, if you remember the former Green Party candidate, Jill Stein, mm-hmm. Well, Clinton came out and accused her outright of being a Russian asset. So this is just a theme for Clinton. It's to get rid of Gabbard, who's the representative from the state of Hawaii, and to move some other candidate into place.
Yeah. This Tulsi Gabbard seems to be a very interesting person. What is it about her, Ron, that is interesting to you?
Well, you know, she's just a little bit more dynamic. But, you know, it's interesting because Linda and I have friends in Hawaii. We've got a place there. And everybody just laughs at her. Nobody in Hawaii takes Gabbard seriously.
Wow. Ilana, what do you think of Tulsi Gabbard?
I was very impressed with her in the first debate. Mm-hmm. And she was a refreshing face in in the company that she was keeping. I don't know what she is like in Hawaii or what people think of her, but I was impressed. But, you know, she is a Democrat and she does espouse a lot of the things that I don't believe in. So I'm sort of torn. I think of all the candidates, she's probably the most impressive and she's the least beholden to the socialist agenda. I think what Hillary Clinton has done, though, has to put the spotlight on her.
That's
and
right.
She brought her out from
Absolutely.
The crowd.
Absolutely.
She singled her out. But I think it's very clear also that Hillary is going around the bend and she really is not in control of her.
Well, people think Hillary's going to run again. You think she'll put her name in the hat at the last minute? Hear her or somebody? Or is there actually? There's also talk, Ilana, about Bloomberg possibly doing that. Do you think there's another candidate will enter the race?
I don't like Bloomberg at all. I think what he did to New York was a disaster. Yeah. But when he was mayor, Hillary may very well join the race because she's delusional. She said, I'd love to run against Trump again, and I'll win again. I mean, she's nuts. She's not. She didn't win the first time.
People are actually starting to wonder if she's having serious mental health problems. And I'm not being funny when I say that, but I'm really seeing people are thinking she's got some mental health problems. Of course, that probably, when you're attached to Bill Clinton, that probably runs in the family people. So in any event,
let me tell you the person that I would watch out for at the last minute, and that's Michelle Obama. Okay, just think about that.
I hear a lot of reports of that too. You believe that could happen?
I absolutely do. And I think if she joined up with someone like Warren or, you know, someone of that nature, I think there'd be some serious problems because don't forget the former president and Michelle have got more of an underground political organization going that's still gathering millions and millions of dollars. So watch out for that.
Ron, if that happened, what you put out there right now, and I'm glad you said what you said, I mean, in a kind of an odd sort of way, if that really happened and you had sort of a ticket of like a Michelle Obama and a Warren or somebody like that, as you say, on one side, and you had, and a lot of people would rally around that, as you say, because you'd have two women in both roles, that would be beyond historical. Be a game changer. And then you had Trump and the movement there. I mean, in an odd sort of way, Ron, wouldn't that almost be an invitation to a civil war in this country?
Boy, I'll tell you what, there would be a tremendous amount of unrest, but I'm telling you,
don't
discount Michelle Obama coming in at the last second, because look how much, you know, these people, these Democrats are still fighting back and forth to find out who's going to be on the top tier.
That's right.
But nobody really likes a lot of them. Mm-hmm. And all these bottom tier people are going to go away. I guarantee you.
A big thank you here to Dr. Ron Martinelli, Ilana Friedman here. More Viewpoints in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
So I asked her the question up front here, what's behind the whole impeachment thing, the inquiry behind closed doors kind of thing. I mean, this is not traditional the way we would run this sort of a thing. And so I asked you the question, is this a partisan publicity campaign or is this truly a president who is out of control? What's the purpose to get him out of him? Now, people, if you just do simple math here from day number one, when Donald J. Trump took office, what we see here is a fight of opposition here against a president that was elected by the people. We the people. Now, if you listen to Hillary Clinton in recent days, she said she'd like to beat Trump again. So, you know, this is where we've got a lot of this political leadership in this country that is really creating quite civil unrest. And I mentioned that to you here earlier. Could we be in a position of what happens next through this 2020 election? We're in some interesting times. So I think people are understanding that it's not business as usual here. Let's talk about this impeachment here. Welcome on Colonel Jim Warshak. Colonel Warshak is retired from United States Air Force. He's a career senior intelligence special missions officer, former deputy director of intelligence at U.S. Central Command, served on the White House National Security Council staff as intelligence aide to the National Security Advisor. Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro joins us in this talk. Lieutenant Joe is a retired police lieutenant, director of school security. He's a master trainer, the owner of True Security Design. He's host of Chasing Justice. He's a voice of reason, a voice of common sense on the network here. People like to hear what Lieutenant Joe has to say. Good to have both Lieutenant Joe, Colonel Jim here to talk about this here. So the impeachment thing, I asked the question, is this really an impeachment process in the way that it normally would be, or is this a partisan publicity campaign? Now, listen, President Trump and the Speaker and the powers to be, the Democrats, got together in the White House this past week. You've seen the publicity. Right away, there was a big how-to-do. Nancy Pelosi gets up. She puts the finger up at the president. Not throwing the middle finger, but pointed at him, I mean to say here. I'm going to take that out of context now. And, of course, what she did really was the middle finger, though I say that, Colonel, and that really kind of was that. In fact, quite frankly, I've seen reports, and Jim, I want you to speak about this, but I heard reports that, you know, she went in there, people are suspecting, already knowing what she was going to do, because when he passed out that letter that the president sent to President, that he sent to President Erdogan out of Turkey, she took the letter, picked it up, and flipped it down with her hand on the table there on the conference table to sort of give them hell. So you tell me, what was that sort of a call to build this fight?
That was partisan antics at its best. That was deliberate. That was staged. Everything she did at that meeting was all pre-programmed and set. That was her way of trying to tell the public through the media that she had the upper hand. The other interesting thing is it was so choreographed. Her and Schumer got up, walked outside, and right there was the media already waiting for her and Schumer to do a little press conference on what just transpired. And that was all designed so that she could get the upper hand, or attempt to get the first word out on the street of what occurred at that meeting. And if you listen to others, both Democrat and Republicans who were at that meeting and stayed, the meeting went very well afterwards, and none of what she said happened occurred, according even from Democrats saying it was a very good meeting. We had a lot of great discussions, and we talked about what occurred. That was staged, because this is what they do, just like the whole impeachment process. It's all made for TV fanfare, because they have nothing. They, you know, we've talked about this before. Yeah. Impeachment has been on the top of the docket 72 hours after he was elected president in November 16. And that's what they've been going with. So the whistleblower, all this is all staged. This is all, they have nothing. They have nothing. And they're scared to death of the forthcoming FISA report. And we can talk about that.
I definitely want to talk about that in a moment. Let me ask Joe, you the big question, Joe, is it a desperate act of what's really going on right now with a president that's out of control? Or do you think maybe, Joe, that it could be in an odd sort of way, a reflection on the quality of the candidates that they have on the left that are seeking the office? Because if you watch those Democratic debates, I mean, this is, it's beyond circus. I mean, the kind of people and the quality of the people here. Do you think they're concerned with being defeated in 2020, that we the people are going to support President Donald J. Trump again? And is this another desperate act?
Malcolm, it's crystal clear that the politics of America of 2019 is out of control. There's always been a sleight of hand component to politics. You know, you kiss the babies, you slap people on the back. you're trying to, you know, portray yourself the way you want. All of this, if it wasn't for the fact that it was so dangerous for us as a country, right, that these people are not real, all of this is made up. Like the colonel was saying, they have been looking for any reason for impeachment since the day before the election happened, that this is damaging to our country. This is not just one party trying to gain a little position over the other so that they can have some more favorability. This is all a lie. They are making up things. There's seven more things in the hopper when this doesn't work. You know, next we're going to hear that he did something else, and immediately, well, that's an impeachable thing. We're going to go after that. They are refighting that 2016 election, and they're damn determined to do anything they can to overturn it because they just can't stomach it. That's a problem.
Yeah,
that's not how this works. You know, one side wins, they get to do what they want. You don't like what they do? Push the lever the next time and go in a different direction. This nonsense that they keep coming up with, mm-hmm, is, I'm hoping people see through it.
Well, that's the key. Are they seeing through it? And I ask myself that question all the time, Joe. Are they seeing through it? Listen, the Christmas recess, it's coming faster than we realize, people. I know when you say the word Christmas, you're already saying, oh, my golly, I got to shop already for the kids? But it is coming quick, believe it or not. When they take off for Christmas recess, Jim, you know, that break there, and they're trying to push the articles of impeachment, what I understand, if they do bring it to a floor vote, and I guess the first question is, does that happen? Do they bring it to a floor vote? Does it happen before Christmas, as their suggestion? And then the third thing, which I think is the big elephant in the room, is going to be the Horowitz report, which I want to talk to you about now, Jim, and that I understood that was going to be out by now, but it was delayed again. How far delayed is this out? And is that report, Jim, a game changer and going to be a problem for the Democrats in this whole impeachment process?
Well, that's a key thing here. This is what we're watching here. This is sort of a cat and mouse game. It's all timing. Everything is really centered around the Horowitz FISA report. It's the FISA portion of the big Horowitz report. We heard the first part of it a month or so ago, and now we have, you know, it's almost as if Barr and Durham are holding this over the Democrats' head. Every few days, every week, we get a little new sprinkle of information that comes out about what's going to be in there. And the people who are considered the political pundits and experts are saying it's going to be very damaging. It's horrific. The stuff that's going to come out, this is all being timed. Now they're using, and this is Barr and Durham and the Trump White House. They're using, well, they're debating on what should be redacted and what should be, and this is going on. Everything's going fine. They're holding back because they want to see how far the Democrats are going to go with the impeachment issue. They don't have the votes. Pelosi came out this week and said, well, we're not going to do a vote on it for now. It's, again, she's got to say something because she doesn't have the votes. And she knows even if she had the votes and they were able to push it to the Senate, the Senate would reject it, and that would be the end of them. And then the Horowitz report would drop, which is, you know, they're talking about the impeachment has to happen before the Thanksgiving, Christmas holidays. And that's true, because as soon as that happens, we go into full bore into the real election year in January.
That Horowitz report is going to change the momentum. I mean, that's going to take the wind out of the sail of the impeachment talk, isn't it?
Oh yeah. And I mean, and some of the other things that are going on, Durham, watch Durham. He is using this delay to up the ante in the report. He's now investigating the intelligence community involvement in the Russia collusion probe. That's going to be devastating. That's where he's going to take down people like Comey and Brennan and Clapper, because that's where they had their hands in it, and they're scared to death on that. And on top of that, he's already going back all the way to about 2012. And if you recall what we talked about about 2012, that's when the Obama administration first started spying on Americans, and they upped it to like 40,000 Americans. He has got enough leads in his investigation to go all the way back there. That's That's the real bad stuff there. And that's going to come back on Obama. And that's going to be a key aspect of going after Obama, because that all happened under Obama's watch. And, you know, when you're the president, it stops at your desk. And to allow spying on American citizens, and I'm not talking about Donald Trump and his people, I'm talking about regular Americans, some of them somewhat prominent because of what they are, people on the conservative side of things. That's going to be the real damaging aspect.
Yeah, so there's a big picture here that everybody loses track of. I think people are not really focused and paying attention to the big picture, Jim, Joe. So let me try to do this here. If we look at the big picture right now, Jim, you just talked about the Horowitz report, John Durham, that report is going to come out. These are supposed to be game-changing reports. Now, if you look at all this right now, what are the stakes? Well, the stakes are pretty high if you consider the fact that we have a general election coming up, Joe, as Jim was just saying, the 2020, I mean, that's full boat now, right after the holiday season. We're in the election year cycle. You've also got a president who has put into play a lot of conservative judges. I mean, a record amount of conservative judges in the circuit courts, also, let alone the Supreme Court, but in the courts up and down. That is making the left very, very nervous. When you look at the candidates that are in play right now, I think we're setting ourselves up for some possible challenges ahead. Looking at big picture, Joe, this is going to be, I think, a telltale year for America coming into 2020. I'm curious to see what we'll look like come January 2021, Joe.
Obviously, the biggest scandal that has ever happened to our country, ever. It's been largely ignored by the media. And my concerns are this. I think all of us, Colonel, you, me, Malcolm, everybody, we see what went on here. It's very clear. You don't have to be a genius to look and see the chicanery that went on here. And it's obvious. My concern is that, because this is, you know, are they going to go all the way up to Obama? Are they going to indict everyone up to Obama and say, well, we're going to indict a past president? I think we're going to get reports that are going to point fingers and say things were wrong. But I'm afraid that they're going to stop short of frog marching Jim Comey into a courtroom, Clapper, all these other guys. I have a feeling that that's going to be cut short, that they're going to say they were wrong and they allowed things. We just saw a report come out very recently. With Hillary Clinton's emails, almost 600 violations. Well, we can only identify 47 people that actually did anything.
Right.
So I think we're going to get the same watered down. Boy, there was a lot of bad things happened here, but not enough to indict anyone.
Yeah, no, we get that a lot. You're right. They kind of, you get these reports out and they sort of fizzle. You've heard me talk about that a lot. I'm very critical of that, because what you're saying is they're not held to the fire. There's no, so you think, Joe, what you're saying is you think the indictments and the people that are called accountable are just below the senior level, the Comey, the Brennan, the Clapper. You think it's some of the people below that that'll get in trouble, but not those top tier people. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm going to think that they're not, and I would be thrilled if they did, because this is what the country needs, the cleansing. This is unprecedented what these people did.
Right.
I'm just concerned that, you know, the Washington establishment is not going to let that happen.
All right, well, let me do
and
this.
It has to happen to maintain our situation.
Let me do this now, Joe. So now you listened a minute here. Now I'm going to give it over to our Colonel Jim Warshak a minute, who understands this inside baseball. And let's ask Jim the straight out question with Washington politics. Jim, does it go to that level of the Brennan, Clapper, Comey group, the top tier talent? Does it go just below Obama? Are these people going to be in trouble, indicted?
I think there's going to be a number of indictments, and here's why. Donald Trump, we still can't get our arms around Donald Trump as being the outsider guy who came there to drain the swamp, as he has said a million times. We hear him say that all the time. If there aren't going to be any indictments, he should just not even run for re-election. He just should just go away, because he would be just part of the same. He does not want that in his legacy. If he would be the biggest laughing stock. Everything he did wouldn't count, because he didn't fix anything. Okay, you ran, you did great policy for America and you helped our economy and everything, but what good does that do if we still have a bastion of corruption in Washington, D.C.? There has to be indictments. Now, I'll say this right off. Obama will not be indicted. We're never going to indict a former president. I think that would be extremely damaging to the country. But presidents live on legacies. And if your legacy has an asterisk next to it, I see Brennan, Clapper. What I think we're going to see with Comey, because the guy is a big coward. Comey is going to talk and talk and talk and point fingers and do everything. And he's going to do and say things to avoid prison. He'll be indicted.
Right.
He'll be indicted, but he won't go to prison. You know, and I suspect Brennan will, because Brennan is behind so much. Yeah. Will people like Strzok and others go down? Yeah, absolutely. McCabe, I suspect they're all going to do maybe a year in jail and fines. But it's not like we lock these people away forever. That's not the point. To get indictments to prove wrongdoing,
right,
and the fact that they did it deliberately and intentionally is the key thing. And well, that will scare the hell out of other people in Washington.
We hope like hell. And the other key word, Jim, Joe, is cleansing. One of you guys mentioned cleansing. Is it time to have that cleansing again of the country? And, you know, of course, you hear Colonel Warshak say that, well, probably won't happen to a prior president, like an Obama kind of thing. And that may be. But, friends, if you want the ultimate cleansing, you really should cleanse everybody who's done wrongdoing to the level of what's happened here, because there's a lot of funny business that's gone on in the past many, many years. And another thing, people, it's on both sides of the aisle. Let's be clear. It's on both sides of the aisle. There are plenty of Republicans in there with dirty hands as well. It's a very large deep state. It goes far and wide. And these people think that they own the place. Hopefully, we'll teach them a lesson or two here, people. Thank you again here to Colonel Jim Warshak, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. So if we take the conversation we just had, people, and we bring it forward, should America be the world's police force? You hear a lot of the conversations with Syria and Turkey going on. Let's have that conversation next year as we roll on. More Viewpoint in just a moment. It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Interesting conversation next about America being the world's police force. And should we be? It's an age-old question. And, you know, for those out there who seem to answer that question quickly and decisively, it always comes back to the fact, if this was your son or your daughter or your husband or your wife, personally, for real, I mean, and they were in harm's way and they were killed from an act of war like this here, then maybe you answer that question just slightly different, potentially. And just keep that in your mind a moment. Sometimes we look, and I don't need to be shallow here, but sometimes we think about life, if it's somebody else's kid or relative or something, maybe it doesn't matter as much. I think that is an ultimate question. And then let's counter that now with the fact of American security, American might, keeping the homeland safe. Where do we draw the line on all that, people? These are real questions and concerns that we need to ask ourselves, clearly. Let's do that next and bring on what I would say is a power panel for sure here. Dennis Santiago is here. He's an American strategist, philosopher, patriot, focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. Jim McKay is here. He's a political analyst, commentator, radio producer. Jim has a 30-year background in global technology and telecommunications. And joining us back again for this segment is Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro. Lieutenant Pangaro, again, is a retired police lieutenant, focuses on school security, safety, the host of Chasing Justice, as you know, here on the America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. Gentlemen, war and peace, it's an age-old question, but one that is in the front right now. because of things that have been said and some of our actions in Syria and Turkey and other, but other factors as well. And again, now I preface this up front by saying, well, what if this was your son, your daughter, your sort of thing like that? I don't think that's a big question. Lieutenant Joseph Panguero, I want to start with you because you've got children yourself that are at that age where you might question that. Would you be willing to sacrifice their life? That's a tough order, but I want to start there with the emotional human factor. What would you say to that, sir?
Malcolm, it's a very difficult thing. My youngest son is 16 years old, and he's looking to go to the Marines. He wants to be a United States Marine. He's a very patriotic young man. He wants to do the right thing by his country, and I support him 100%. As a parent, it is frightening to think that my son might go off to a conflict and he might die on some foreign battlefield. So that conversation has come up in our house where we talk about this and we say, is there a reason that is worth the life of one of your children? And it sounds like a bizarre thing to say, but if we look back across the history of our country, we have always had to reach out to these young men and women to sacrifice their lives, their body parts, their futures, so that the greater American situation could continue. So freedom, justice, liberty in the entire world could continue. And having this conversation with my wife, because obviously, you know, she's concerned about it, I said, listen, I would never want to lose my child. I wouldn't want to lose my Jack. I love this young man. But if his destiny is to go forth and be a warrior for America and what America stands for, and freedom and liberty of humanity, then we have to rely on our faith and say, faith says this is not the only world. There's more than this. And is that worth that sacrifice? We look at World War II. How many thousands of young men died in that conflict? And we look at that and we say, it was a horrible sacrifice, but it's something that had to be done. And those young men are heroes for what they did. Their legacy is that of American continuation, of keeping this alive in mankind. And when it comes to that, I would not want to lose my son. But if it was a genuine conflict that we needed for freedom, liberty, and justice, mm-hmm. that had American need, I would say if that was his choice to go, I would support him in that. Mm-hmm. And I would have great pride that he would stand up for his country, even to the point of sacrifice, which is a hard thing to say as a parent.
Sure, sure. Well, what we're speaking about now is the preservation of the Republic is what you're speaking about, Joe. So if it's about the preservation of the Republic, then the rules of the game change. And that really is the quandary we find ourselves in right now, Dennis. And I think the point I'm glad that you heard Lieutenant Panguero put it out there from a parent, but also from a patriot standpoint. These are real human beings. These are real men and young men and young women on the front lines. And I think it is a question now that we're talking about because Trump has brought it up. We're trying to end these endless wars. So the big question becomes, as we always talk about, should we be the world's police force? To you, Dennis, I ask you that. Is there a need for us to be the guardians of peace, or should we just take a strategic defense posture as a country? Difficult question.
It is a difficult question, and there is no easy answer. Okay. There is no war being fought on this planet right now that is an existentialist threat to the United States. Absolutely none of them are. Should the United States be the world's policeman? You know, so that whole thing really kicked off after Vietnam, because after 1975, we had a watershed because we lost a war, okay? No ifs, ands, or buts about it. We lost, okay? And so ever since then, we've come back. And we came back starting with Grenada in the 90s. From there, went into the Clinton administration, and we went on this thing about saving the world from evil, okay? A human rights campaign. Now, a human rights campaign is essentially something that the United States has an interest in, but is it an existential interest for the U.S. that if we don't pursue human rights all over the planet, which likes to kill people, is that something that we really need to get into all the way every time? Mm-hmm. Or is it something we need to be measured about every time we come across one of these situations? I'm on the side that says we need to be measured about these things every time we look at it. We need to look at it on a case-by-case basis. And in some cases, okay, 4,000 people, 4,000 Americans died as a result of the Iraq war, starting from when it very began to about to a couple of years ago. At the same time, 400,000 people died in the Middle East because we engaged that area. So do we really do any good is one of the questions that I always ask. And I'm not really sure that we did.
Yeah. Well, that is it. I mean, if you look at you're talking about as a total sum of the people in the Middle East, clearly, over all those years, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, since about 2003. Yeah. I mean, you know, we kill hundreds of thousands of people per decade because we're trying to save the planet.
Right.
Are we really saving the planet? I'm not really sure.
Well, that's a really interesting position to take and to put out there and to make one think here. Was this the right move, Jim? And is there a cause and reaction for what might happen in Syria?
I don't think it's totally the right move, but then again, it's being reported incorrectly. We still have 60,000 troops in the theater. I mean, naval battle groups, aircraft, land, and at sea. We moved 50-some-odd troops out of the way of an onrushing Turkish war machine, if you want to call it that. They were set on coming in and doing this. For months, they've had negotiations with the Turks' leaders, and they've refused to back away from this policy. So we either needed to put 10,000 troops there to stop them, which there would have been outcries from Congress and in the media and everything that Trump is now a warmonger and they were going to be back and involved fully in the Middle East again. Or he pulls the troops out and he takes all this lathering from the generals, from the public, from the media and everybody, because it's presented in an incorrect way. We don't have a responsibility to be in every conflict around the world. And if you go back to, say, the 1970s, when these conflicts were still going on after we got out of Vietnam, now it's 24 hours immediacy, it's on the news, and we're involved in it from a public display. I mean, it doesn't make it, this whole thing of being the policeman, being involved in every little thing going around the world is senseless. We're never going to be able to stop this, whether it's tribal, whether it's racial, whether it's political conflicts.
That's it. Happening. A blood and treasure in that order, basically. The money and the investment of blood that we put out there. Consider since World War II, the end of that, we spent trillions of dollars of American capital might. As we've got a crumbling infrastructure back here at home, they spend money like drunken sailors out there. And when you consider, again, we've lost over 120,000 men and women and countless more injured. And that's the other thing. People come back with missing limbs and total life changes. And I've had a lot of these people on the programs here. And another thing that really irritates a lot of people, by the way, is this notion of pushing American democracy out there. So our way of life, let's call it our way of life. That's a real problem, child, that we seem to want everybody, as you say, that Jim handled it well, tribal wars and all kinds of petty stuff out there because people hate each other. There's a lot of good and evil out there, Dennis, but that's all a problem, isn't it? I mean,
well, people hate each other all over the world all the time, and especially so in the Middle East, okay? Here's the thing about being a world policeman, right? Let's just concentrate on Syria for a second, okay? If we went in there and we butted heads with Turkey, now you have two members of NATO invading a sovereign nation. Because we weren't invited into Syria, okay? And Syria is a sovereign nation. Now you've got two members of NATO fighting each other, occupying a foreign state.
Would Turkey still have come in and decimated and started the war with the Kurds and trying to get hold of North Syria there? Joe, what do you think?
Well, I think eventually they would certainly do that. Because I'm going to build on what Dennis said and what Jim said. When we look at this world situation, we get caught up in different eras of thought. You know, the American way of life, what we consider to be, this would be the greatest way for people to live with freedom and liberty. And in the last 20 years, we've tried to export that, figuring if we show people the way of freedom and liberty and liberate their tyrants from them, they will immediately embrace, you know, American type of liberty, and that would make the world safer. What I think we're realizing, and history is our greatest teacher, when we look back, we've given these countries these opportunities to adopt American-style freedom and liberty, and they don't want it. They are going to hate each other. They have tribal wars that go back thousands of years, and we're trying to impose American freedom because we think that's the best.
So what are we accomplishing then, Joe? What are we accomplishing?
And this is where I'm going to go to Dennis's point. We have to look at this in a strategic position. We cannot save the world. The rest of the world is not America. We cannot give them freedom. What we can look at each individual conflict as, how does it affect the United States? As there comes to be a point in time, if we could go back in a time capsule and see the rise of Adolf Hitler and the Nazi Party, right, it would have made absolute perfect sense to get in early when we could have went in and taken that out, because it cost the world 60 million people. But we don't always have that insight. We have to look in each situation and say, okay, what is our position here? How does this affect the Americans? These people tearing each other apart over in the Middle East. We needed the oil. We needed the fuel from over there. So we had to be involved because we had an interest in that. That has now changed. We have to rethink this whole save the world. If people are dying of famine and we can bring them some food, that's a nice thing to do. But to get involved militarily, unless it is in our interest, and if it is, we go in and do what we have to do. We have to learn that lesson also.
Well, Joe, it's like if you're standing on the side of a wall, brother, and you just keep hitting your head against the wall, and, you know, and right. I mean, at what point do you stop? I mean, because you're not moving the wall. You're not going to move it. And actually, if you follow his thinking there, Jim, what basically he's saying, I think more or less, if we follow the rules of what Dennis and Jim put out there, then Trump made the right decision then.
Yeah, I think that when you say hitting your head against the wall, the rational person stops hitting
head
against the wall because it doesn't hurt any longer.
Yeah.
The crazy people just keep hitting their head against the wall. I think our politicians are a little bit crazy, maybe even a little bit more than a little. They keep doing this same thing over and over and over, thinking that everybody in Zimbabwe wants a Chevrolet SUV in their garage. They don't have garages. They don't have roads over there. So, I mean, trying to sell them that the American way is the best in the world just isn't going to play in the third world and a lot of other people. These people struggle on a daily basis to survive, but we'd be better giving them water processing plants than armaments. We are the world's largest marketer of weapons.
Yeah, oh, yeah, we give it to both sides as well, you know.
Yeah, we arm both
Go kill
Iran
each other.
And Iraq to fight against each other.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah. And the military-industrial complex, they just sit back there and just love it all, don't they, Jim?
Oh, you know? They rake in billions and billions.
Oh, yeah, it's big money. In the meantime, I asked the question about, is it, you know, do you think, Jim, President Trump, Donald J. Trump, he has many libertarian viewpoints, doesn't he?
Very much so. I mean, yeah. Go back. He's a businessman. He knows what the cost of building something is. He knows what the cost of war is. He knows we're throwing away trillions of dollars.
Well, remember, he didn't want war when he was a young man. He avoided war himself. He didn't want to be involved in war. He didn't want to die. Correct? I mean, let's face it. He avoided war, Jim, when he was a young man.
Nobody wants to do that. I mean, there's a dedication of our military. It's a totally volunteer force today. These people have a calling, maybe call it that they feel that they have a duty to defend this country against our enemies. But we need to choose wisely who they are. If Congress wants us to have a conflict in the Middle East, to have thousands and thousands of people there, they should declare a war. But they don't. They stand back and they criticize.
Wow. There's something just so sick about the whole process, Dennis, as we're talking here. I try to think about the mindset of a President Trump and why he does what he does or how he does what he does. And as a young man, Dennis, I made the comment to McCabe there, he avoided the war. He did not want to be involved in the war. We talk about patriots, and I asked Joe Panguero, you know, would his son be willing to die or not for the country? He put a beautiful explanation out there to start this discussion. But I think you could ask the same thing. Would a young Donald J. Trump been willing to die for this country? Dennis, can you answer that?
I don't know the answer to that. I will say, you know, I for all my life, I've been willing to die for this country. Okay. And because that's what you do when you're a patriot. Now, here's an interesting factoid for you, Malcolm, in that this is George Bush versus the rest of America. It's 2003, the coalition of the willing, right? In 2003, when George Bush was pushing to go into the Middle East and invade Iraq and overthrow Saddam Hussein, I remember there were two guys that were very much against it for very, very different reasons. Okay. One was a fellow by the name of Barack Obama. The other was a fellow by the name of Donald Trump.
That's right.
Barack Obama was against going into that area because he believed that the people of that area, and in particular, the various religious factions of that area needed to settle out whatever was going on. And he was kind of in the mood to let them have their ascendance into the main, the world of control. I think it was a bad decision because they turned out to be crazy. But, you know, he was coming from that point of view. Donald Trump, at the same time, was coming from the point of view of basically saying that the American people do not have what it takes to go over there and stay for 100 years and be a colonial power. That it's just not what we do. So for very, very different reasons, they both opposed George Bush. Time has proven both of these men to have been correct in their assessment that going over there was a morass. Okay. Now you got the military, which does its duty. And when they go into places like this, it begins to develop an affinity for the people over there. And in particular, the Kurds, who, you know, did want to be like America. But the fact of the matter is they're in an area where no empire has ever survived. They've all been overthrown over and over again in reversals of fortune.
Well, it keeps going on and on.
Yeah. Oh, forever. I mean, so Donald Trump still has the same assessment that America will not stay for 100 years to get a job like that done because it's just not what we do. And I think he's right.
Yeah. Well, you know, you asked the question, being a patriot, you would do whatever you had to do and give your life for the country. And there have been a lot of patriots in this country that have done that. There are different forms of patriot. But then is patriotism also, Joe Panguero, I want to ask you, is patriotism also the point of stupidity? You know, what does that mean? Are you a patriot because you get involved in something to give your life up for a worthless, senseless law that isn't going to accomplish a damn thing? Is that a sense of patriotism or is that a sense of stupidity, Panguero?
Malcolm, I think you paint a perfect question here. Blind loyalty simply to your country, right or wrong, is a mistake.
Right.
It's the ideals that America stands for that you're fighting for, not just the fact that we love the particular land we live on. It's what is our traditions about? Why are we here at this particular time? If we had AOC and all her friends elected and they socialized us, is that something you're willing to die for now? Because your country's now a socialist country. So we're going to die for American socialism. This is where we make this mistake. Our politicians are the weak link in all of this. We don't have people who have the same beliefs and traditions of what brought us to this point in history. We are changing now, and therefore every paradigm we've had before has got to change and shift. We have to look at every single option that we have in each and every situation and decide what really is the best.
You know, because you think of Donald Trump, you think about this is a patriotic man who's run for the office, but he doesn't. But you also have to realize, people, he doesn't belong to the stupid farm of what are you giving your life up for, in other words. You know, so let's ask that question. What are we giving our life up for? That's a big question there. Are we willing to do it? Well, if the circumstances are right, and if that's going to save the republic, if this is what it takes, okay, I'm willing to do that. I'm willing to lie down my life and fight for the country. Yeah, absolutely. That's a patriot. I get it. But for what reason? What's the goal? What do we accomplish? Think about that, people. Let's also think about the young men and women that we have out there in harm's way. Let's also think about the shining city on a hill and American might and exceptionalism and what it, and the beacon around the world and what it is, what it stands for. I like some of the conversations here about helping people out for the right reason. But what is the right reason? If it's a tribal war or people that are being senseless and ruthless with each other, is that the right reason? I don't think so, kids. I think that's where we have to draw the line. And that takes a big adults in the room to be able to do that. And then the military-industrial complex can shut the hell up because we're not going to build the caucus in the future here. Big conversation, obviously. Lots to think about, people. But I like what we discussed here. This has been an amazing viewpoint because of the amazing talent you've just heard here. This is the cornerstone of just great, great people, talent, patriots here, all that you hear on the entire viewpoint here, friends, here. We welcome you back always to AmericaOutloud.com, where you'll find lots of silent voices no more. And truth is our mission. It's our passion. And getting to the bottom line of all these conversations is important. Friends, it's time to get involved and get loud.